This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Activist investor Nelson Peltz is looking to change how Procter & Gamble does business. Peltz is the CEO of Trian Fund Management, and he's in a proxy battle to win a seat on the P&G board. If shareholders elect him at their October 10th meeting, his plans include restructuring the international consumer products giant and substantially reducing its corporate staffing. Here to talk about Peltz's attempt to change how Procter & Gamble operates is Inquirer business reporter Alex Coolidge. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Alex, thank you. Good to see you this afternoon.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here.
So in one corner, we have Procter & Gamble, the world's largest consumer products company, led by CEO David Taylor. Mm-hmm. And in the other corner, we have this challenger, Trian Fund Management, which is led by Nelson Peltz.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about Trian and Peltz.
Nelson Peltz is the head of a hedge fund. He typically invests in consumer companies that have sort of fallen out of favor with shareholders.
So he looks like if they're undervalued maybe,
yes,
or underperforming. Is that what, yes, he says he's looking at?
Okay. And then basically he acquires a chunk of stock in the company and then basically begins to start making friendly or maybe not so friendly little suggestions to leadership. And sometimes the reception is, you know what, maybe we'll give that a shot. And then sometimes it's, no way, we're going to fight you tooth and nail. And Procter has opted for door number two on that one at this time. So currently, Nelson Peltz, this is possibly the largest or the largest proxy fight ever. The company is worth $230 billion in market capitalization. So even though Nelson Peltz has more than $3 billion worth of stock in the company, he's only got 1.5% of shares outstanding. So what he's counting on to be successful is he's hoping to win shareholder support, from just mom and pop retailer, former retirees with a few hundred or a few thousand shares, all the way up to major institutions voting for him. That's what he needs in order to be successful.
So what exactly is the fight about? I mean, what's he saying he wants to do if he gets this position on the board?
Well, the vote is actually about getting a seat. Mm-hmm. But then once he gets the seat, he believes he will have plenty of he'll have a platform to better influence the company's strategy. And then also oversight of executive management. Now, he's basically seeking one seat out of 11. He actually says it'll be 12 because he's zeroing in on one board member to knock off. But then he basically says, hey, once I'm in there, the first thing I'm going to say is let's bring that guy back. So it'd be one of 12. Procter doesn't want him in the room because they just think he'll be disruptive. They have a plan. They've been chugging away at this turnaround now for about 5 years. And they don't want him coming out with, suggestions that would sort of radically change the course.
This is a good time to bring in Damon Jones, who's joining us by phone now. He's Procter & Gamble's Director of Company Communications.
Damon, and how are you?
Damon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
I know you.
Good to be with you.
Yes.
What exactly is the company's position? Can you give us the official?
Well, quite simply, P&G's plan and our transformation is working. We have significant momentum. We've delivered a total shareholder return of 28%. Since November of 2015, when David Taylor was appointed our new CEO, and more importantly, since we really got through large phases of our transformation plan, cleaning up our portfolio, delivering more than $10 billion in productivity savings, and really doing many things to get our organization and culture in shape to win. That plan is working. We've got significant momentum. And right now, we don't want to do anything that would derail the progress that is delivering value for P&G shareholders. So our position, quite simply, is let's continue the momentum. The plan is working. And Mr. Pelch right now is not right for the P&G board.
So is what you're saying that much of what Pelch is suggesting, P&G is already doing these things and implementing these things?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been in talk with Trian Partners for more than 16 months. There have been more than, there have been more than 16 interactions between our senior management and members of our board. And despite what has been a 94-page long white paper, there aren't really new, meaningful, actionable ideas that we think would create value for shareholders. We think that paper really shows that the view that Mr. Pelch of Trian has is outdated and misinformed and would not create value for the long term, which is what we're trying to do for P&G shareholders.
Procter & Gamble's stock price has been it's been pretty even for several years now.
It's been kind of range bound from 70 to the mid 80s, but this fight has actually pressed the stock price up to close to an all-time high, which is in about $93. But it's emblematic of some of the expectations. Basically, shareholders either think that Mr. Pelch is going to win and he's going to do all sorts of great things and, you know, whatever, and that'll boost profits, or also they're thinking, well, you know what, Mr. Pelch is just going to keep them on their toes and they're going to perform under duress, but they are going to perform better. And so it's kind of based on there's a lot of anticipation out there for Procter. So it's having an effect on shares. What we don't know is how sustainable it is, because the multiple on the stock right now is very rich. You know, Procter is not suddenly saying, hey, we've discovered, you know, an extra couple of $1 billion in profits in the couch that we didn't know were there, which would make it more sustainable, that sort of thing. So,
Damon, did you want to respond?
Well, no. I mean, it's hard for me to predict every nuance about the stock market. What I will say is that our last fiscal year that we've recently completed, I think, demonstrates that our plan is working. We delivered our top-line growth. We delivered our bottom-line growth of 7%, 11% when you take out the very significant impact of foreign exchange. Our free cash flow productivity is delivering at or above expectations. So we do think Procter is on track and well-positioned to have continued sustained growth in the future. We're a stronger, more focused company. We're poised and we're committed to continue to win in the marketplace.
Anything else, Damon?
That's it. This will be a battle where, you know, P&G didn't ask for this proxy fight, but we're committed to communicating our position, encouraging everyone to vote the blue card in the shareholder fight, because we believe that is what is in the short, mid, and long-term interests of the company and our shareholders. So more information on the proxy battle and P&G's position can be found on our website, which is voteblue.pg.com.
Damon, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
P&G Director of Company Communications, Damon Jones. Now, Damon mentioned the blue ballot. There's actually a blue ballot and a white ballot, correct?
Yeah. Alex? The white ballot is Pelch's ballot, and it's very confusing for a lot of shareholders, because basically every time one side goes, oh, yeah, to the other side, they're required by the SEC to refile a whole bunch of paperwork with the SEC for the latest exchange, but then they end up mailing out all that paper to shareholders. There's 2.7 billion shares outstanding out there. And so a lot of people are getting their mailbox overflowing with all these, you know, 100-page documents detailing everything. I feel for people. The recycling bin must be really overflowing in some people's houses. So
And I've heard some shareholders getting multiple copies of these ballots, not just one of each, but again, several, especially the white ones.
Every update. And if you have multiple accounts, I mean, maybe you have P&G shares in a retirement account, and then you have some retail shares, you're going to be getting a mailing for every update for every category in your holdings. So, I mean, if you've got it in your 401k, you'll get a set of mailings. If you just happen to own some in a Vanguard account or something like that, you're going to get mailings for that slab as well. And there's just no way of avoiding that. And they have to. They're required to make these disclosures to shareholders to give them up-to-date, information.
So specifics of Peltz's plan, I think P&G right now has 5 global business units.
Yes.
Peltz is looking at taking them to 3.
He wants to consolidate operations to 3 business units, but then also he's talking about changing the overall structure. Basically what he wants to do is he wants to wipe out a lot of the corporate, turn the company into a glorified holding company. And then have these 3 consolidated operating units acting as virtually standalone companies that are just affiliated with each other. But he's also talking about moving functions like R&D into the specific business units. All this, although he's not spelling it out, translates into cutting jobs, basically. Corporate jobs will be trimmed. He won't say how much, whether it's 1
or 1 million. I was going to ask if we know how many he's talking about. No.
It looks to be thousands. I mean, this is not going to be pretty. Procter & Gamble employs 95,000 people worldwide. They've already chainsawed something like 34,000 in the last 5 years. And there's 10,000 employed here locally in Greater Cincinnati by Procter & Gamble. But I mean, another thing that's come up is the units that are based here, the operations that are based here are smaller than, say, the ones in Singapore and Geneva. So you're a little concerned about, well, does that mean we're going to be moving some jobs? Do the smaller units lose out in the move that's just been ordered up, assuming he's successful in persuading the rest of the board to go through this?
So if he is elected, Alex, he'll be one of technically
11 or 12.
We're not quite sure how that's going to work out yet at this point. How much sway would he really have in implementing these changes that he wants to make if he's only one of maybe a dozen?
That remains to be seen, because assuming he gets first of all, even if he's unsuccessful, he's still going to have considerable amount of sway. If he wins,
because he owns 1.5% of P&G.
Well, also, if 40% of shareholders, or 30%, or even 15% of shareholders vote in favor of them, that signals to the board very loudly that a significant chunk of shareholders are very impatient to see the stock improve, and that is a tremendous amount of pressure to continue trying to improve the company and turn it around. Now, if he wins, he's got an even bigger mandate, but he's 1 vote out of 11 or 12. The rest of the board are not a bunch of, shrinking violets. There are, former heads of Boeing, the aerospace. There's the head of American Express. I mean,
and each one of them has their own ideas on how things should operate.
Exactly. This is a blue chip board, and they all have, I mean, these are all, type A personalities. The guy who's being specifically targeted by Peltz in the proxy fight is Ernest Zedillo, the former Mexican president who became president because somebody got assassinated, basically. So this guy is not going to be rattled, tremendously by, threatening to take away his golf club membership or anything like that. I mean, this is a very high-powered board. But at any rate,
October 10th, though,
he will have some type of a mandate if he makes it onto the board. But then it's up to him to try and persuade the company. To make changes. The problem is there will be some pressure to step things up.
And October 10th is when shareholders will vote on this. Alex, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Enquirer business reporter Alex Coolidge. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier with help from Jim Nolan. Josh Elstro was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney.